Hey everyone, this is Bill Kenny, CEO of Focus Lab, a global B2B brand agency. I'm coming at you with another episode of The Debrief. As a reminder, The Debrief is a candid conversation between myself and past Focus Lab partners. We pull back the curtain and discuss what it's truly like to go through a rebrand. If you're considering a rebrand yourself, this is definitely the series for you. So in today's episode, I'm speaking with the CEO of Four Kitchens, a 65 person and counting web design agency. We had the pleasure of working with Todd and his team over at Four Kitchens starting a year ago. So we recorded this episode before they've actually rolled out live. You'll see why that's interesting as we talk through the process that they're going through currently and getting prepped for their rollout. But we did touch on the power and the masterclass that Todd performed in his internal rollout. A huge takeaway of this episode, among many others. I hope you enjoy. All right, Todd, we're here. We're doing it. Welcome to this next episode of The Debrief. I'm excited to chat with you. It's going to be a unique recording because you technically have not launched the brand yet. I'm typically speaking with past partners of ours that have been out in the market now for 6 months to a year, sometimes 3 years, and you haven't even rolled out yet. So nope. I think that's cool, though. That will drive an interesting conversation here, and I look forward to chatting about it. So first, I'm just going to hit you with the, can you tell people who you are and what you're building at Four Kitchens?
Absolutely. So my name is Todd Nienkirk. I'm CEO, co-founder, and owner at Four Kitchens. We make websites for universities, nonprofits, social advocacy organizations, and non-advertising publishers, non-advertising driven. So public media, trade publications, membership driven publishing, things like that. The common thread there is content heavy. So we build lots of content management driven websites and experiences.
And you've been doing it for a while now. How many years?
17 years. Yep. Yes. 17 years coming up in a couple of weeks, which is hopefully the day we're going to launch the new brand. So we're going to do it on our 17th anniversary. Yeah. And I didn't know about this concept, but apparently there's something called like a golden birthday or a golden anniversary, something like that. And it's the it's when the number of the birthday or anniversary or whatever corresponds with the day of the month. So if it's like you're born on the 5th, then your 5th birthday is your golden birthday. Well, for us, we started on April 17th, 2016. So here we are 17 years later, you know, kind of an auspicious date to.
Yeah. It's weird how the universe aligns sometimes, right?
That's
like, wait, is that real? So in doing these conversations, I generally look back to see like, when did this person first reach out to us and how was the conversation started? Mm-hmm. I didn't have clear data on that because I think there's an existing relationship which might have spawned this, but I do see in Slack for us, April 14th of 2022, so just about a year ago.
Oh, just about a year.
is when you filled out the client submission form, which is basically, hey, we're going to start. That wasn't the like, hey, I want to work with you email. So we're about a year
that was kinda like,
into this relationship.
That's
the rebrand one anyways.
Wow. I didn't realize that. I'll have to share that with the team as well. That's another funny little.
Does it feel like a long time ago or like 3 months ago?
It doesn't feel like that long ago. And I guess I feel that way about a lot of things, I suppose, but the process has just been really great and it's exciting. I feel like the past couple of months have, I wouldn't say they've dragged, but it's because we're building the site now. Right now we're taking the designs provided by Focus Lab and we're actually implementing it on a website. And of course, we are a web design and development agency and we are our own worst clients, but we know it. So we do not try to build our own website. We always rely on outside partners, right? It's a budget line item. We do not bring in our team. This is, by the way, I don't sound smart saying this because for like 15 years, that's exactly what we did. And we never learned the lesson until pretty recently. So I can't give myself any credit for it. It was just out of sheer exhaustion of the stupid option that we are doing it the smart way. That's just taken longer, you know, and also being a web agency, we probably should have realized, oh, it's going to take longer than you think. So we were hoping for like, it'll be a couple of months. And now that we're looking back on it, it's like, it's actually going to take like three and a half. So everything, you know, we're in the very final stages of QA. We're 2 weeks out from this launch. I think that we'll hit it in time, but, you know, we're doing all the final tweaking of accessibility concerns and legacy content and all of that.
17 years of stuff.
Yes. 17 years of, yeah, of blog posts and announcements and about 850 blog posts and 1,000 pages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just a little bit to go through.
Yeah. Just a little bit of work. No big deal. Right. I mean, why couldn't you have it done in a month and a half?
It's lacking.
So at the first part of these conversations, I'd like to get in and kind of like pull out of you how you knew it was time to rebrand and the kind of the decision making in that early process. So that literally is the first question. How mm-hmm. did you know that it was time to rebrand? What spawned it?
So we are an EOS company, like Focus Lab. And mm-hmm. for those who don't know anything about EOS, all you need to know is it's just a way to like set goals and measure milestones and things like that. You know, some people do OKRs and all of this. And what we did back in, well, this was the end of 2021. We set an annual goal for 2022 to document our brand guidelines and unify the look and feel and voice and tone of everything that we are producing internally and externally. So we had the idea of rebranding hadn't really been broached. We thought, let's just document our brand because the stuff that our clients are seeing, like reports, that kind of stuff, not the client work that we produce, but the documentation and all the things around it, like the Google Docs they get all looked kind of different depending on who made them. And some were mm-hmm. kind of using old typefaces and some had gone off the rails and they were doing all kinds of stuff. And we just wanted everything that we did to look really, really polished and really coherent and cogent. So we set this goal to document all of that. And then not even a month later, I was at a Bureau of Digital event, Owner Camp. Mm-hmm. And this was in, I think, Palm Springs. And so this is an event where agency owners, all kinds of agencies, marketing, branding, digital, you know, advertising, video, everybody, we get together in kind of an intimate environment and we just talk really openly about the business and how things are going and problems that we're facing. And we help each other. And it's a lot of like, you know, as agency owners, there isn't a whole lot of natural camaraderie. It's kind of a rarefied role. Mm-hmm. And often we are competitors and all of that just puts up barriers and this space helps tear that down. So in the room, there were a couple of branding agencies there. Well, actually three, I believe. I forget if Focus Lab was there.
Interesting.
I think maybe Eric was there, but I forget. I feel bad that I forget if he was there or not. But there were several branding agencies and, I'll just go ahead and name drop the one that kind of got me started on this. So, I've known Chris from Parliament for probably 12 years or so. He and I mm-hmm. were at the very first owner camp ever back in, I think it was like 2012 or something. And so he and I have stayed in touch for years and years and we stuck around an extra day. This was in Palm Springs and we decided to spend the day like in Joshua Tree and we were there with some other folks. And at the end of the day, you know, we're driving all over the place and it's hours on the road in the desert and we're just kind of chatting. And I was like, you do branding. Like, what are some tips on like documenting brand guidelines? You know, I've never really done that. What should I? He's like, well, let me show you, you know, and we went and got lunch and he opened up his laptop and he showed me the stuff that Parliament had made. And I was like, whoa, this is like really well put together. You know, this is like everything I've always wanted from our brand. Uh-huh. And he's like, well, let me show you how we got there. And he kind of walked me through their process. And that's when I realized we need to hire a branding agency because we need to go through this process. And Parliament is awesome, but they do like outdoor brands and like kind of physical retail brands and things like that. They're not a good match for a digital agency like ours. And that was all totally above board. And we had that conversation. But it inspired me to look for an agency that does specialize in a branding agency that does specialize in working with agencies and tech companies and mm-hmm. people like us. And so that's, we very quickly found Focus Lab. Partly, I think, because of our connections through the Bureau, our connections having conversations about EOS in the past, and just friendships that we had developed over the years. And it just felt like such a natural fit because you specialize in our kind of business. Mm-hmm. And we just really liked the work. And the process, the thing that, if I could just sort of, you know, mutual admiration society here for a moment, if I could highlight something that really stood out working Please. With you in particular, and I think this is a good note for anybody who runs an agency. The thing that really struck me and that made us think like, okay, this is definitely the right partner for us, is that you had such a well-defined process that wasn't like, it wasn't a thousand little steps, but it was like a mm-hmm. handful of high-level steps that were really clear. And we could tell just by going to your website, this is what to expect. This is what's going to happen. We're going to begin with this kind of thing. And the cadence at which with which your team works, where work is delivered midweek, and there's a Loom video that accompanies it. So it's all done asynchronously, which is just kind mm-hmm. of like, hadn't really occurred to me as an agency owner to do. And then, you know, we review it, you know, Thursday, Friday, Monday, we meet on Tuesday. We only meet once a week for an hour. That sounds crazy, you know, to work with a brand. You only meet once a week for an hour.
Yeah, but how do you get creative? Where does the magic come from?
Where does the magic happen? Yeah. So we meet for 1 hour on Tuesday, and it was like a tight hour, like just mm-hmm. an hour. And then it's handed off back to you, and there's more iteration, and then stuff gets delivered on, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and the cycle begins again every week. And like, that was so predictable. And I loved the idea of having this asynchronous, method. And I immediately put myself in the agency's shoes, right? Cause I thought like, mm-hmm. oh, this is amazing because you know this because you do this, but it completely cuts the, like the legs out of the live demo, awkward silence.
Yes.
Everybody feels compelled to say something. And then you wind up saying things that are probably wrong just because you want to fill that awkward space.
Sure.
And you're reacting instinctually and emotionally in the moment. But if you watch a Loom video, you watch the whole thing, you watch it again, you look at it, you pull in a couple of people, you talk about it together, you submit your feedback in a single unified voice, then you've actually digested it, right?
Yes.
And you are not reacting instinctually and emotionally, but you're reacting logically to, okay, you know, at first, I didn't really like this, but I found myself coming back to it again and again and again, and I actually think this is the right way to go. And I don't think we would have gotten there if we were doing these live demo kinds of things. So I have to give you credit because we are switching to similar tactics with our
love
clients
that.
As well.
Love it. Great. Yeah. Wow. You gave us a lot to chew on in the what was broken. You went all the way and you answered a couple other questions. I'll still ask them though.
Oh, great.
But yeah, you hit on something really important there at the end, which is the ability to sit down with a deliverable, regardless of what it is, strategy documents, comms, verbal identity documents, visual identity documents, to sit with that deliverable and actually digest it is very powerful. It can feel counterintuitive, right? You'll hear a lot of people say, well, I just need to see it. No, I don't like that. I'm not going to change my mind on that. I don't like it. I don't have to sit with it. We see it all the time. Mm-hmm. That change over time comes. There are people that are vehement. I won't use that word. There are people that are really opposed to a certain direction. And 2-3 weeks later, as we continue to kind of reposition it, talk about it again, show what works about it, they're like, that's it. That's it. Yep. Holy shit. I never thought I would go with that. And I'm going with that.
Yes.
That's an important part of the process, really.
Yes, it is. And I saw that unfold within our own team a little bit, because we deliberately, also this is part of the advice and process that you give, we kept our core team very small. So the people who were involved in the daily, weekly cycles there were only three of us. And we deliberately didn't show anybody else at the company, not even the leadership team, nobody. We didn't show them anything until we had something that was like, we had a pretty clear direction. You know, we had whittled it down to something, and now we were iterating on fine-tuning it. And I gave the leadership team a little bit of a sneak preview because I wanted to kind of see what the reaction would be, and I wanted to start to prepare for the things that that people might react strangely to or might feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. about because it just feels so yep. different.
Yeah.
And somebody on our leadership team, they saw an early iteration of what we wound up going with. Something looks different than what we've gone with, but is in the same vein. And they really didn't like it. It was a pretty negative reaction. And it took a lot of time and kind of talking through and like, what is it that you know, you don't like about this direction? And a big part of it was our previous branding was really iconic in a way. And for some people, there was a real strong emotional attachment. We had a pretty yes. clever logo and, you yes. know, it had a certain meaning to it. And we'd had it since like 2008, you know, it had been around for, mm-hmm. what is that, 15 years. And just super recognizable. And this person was the second longest tenured person at the company. Right.
Yes.
So of course, they're going to have some strong feelings about it. And me as, you know, as the owner, like I'm ready to just like, let's just throw everything
so
away.
What? Throw it out.
So what? I don't care. Yeah. yeah. Right. Like, so I realized, okay, it's the emotional attachment to the old logo. And so what we decided to do was kind of create a goodbye for it. And
oh, interesting.
Creating
Talk
a goodbye
about
for it. Yeah. It, so the story that I told, and I should have, I'm glad that I had a moment of discomfort with the leadership team and getting pushback on the direction, not because we wound up changing the direction. We didn't. What we changed was how I approached talking about it and introducing it. And I needed that experience because mm-hmm. otherwise, as you know, as business owners tend to be, we just kind of rush headlong into stuff and we get excited and, you know, we bust through the door and everybody's like, wait, but I'm in the middle of something, you know?
I don't know what you mean. I don't do that.
Yeah, not at all. Right. so I realized I need to take a big step back and I needed to start at zero. And this is where your library of content on your website came in really handy. This is where I borrowed a lot from the blog posts and podcasts that you had recorded about what is a brand, what is not a brand, what is a logo, what is specifically, what is the meaning of a logo within a larger brand? And so I borrowed some of the examples that you were using. And at our team retreat in October of last year, so this was 6 months after we had started working with Focus Lab, 10 months after we decided we don't need to document a brand guidelines, we need to rebrand. Mm-hmm. We had finalized the logo and the messaging and visual identity and communication strategy, all of that stuff. The only thing that we were still working on at that point was the design of the website. So all of that other stuff was locked in. We had this retreat, which also happened to be in Palm Springs. So it was a fitting full circle. You know, here we are back at this place where 10 months ago we had decided to start the journey.
Yeah.
The story that I told was on a slide deck that started with our old branding. And piece by piece, slide by slide, I started introducing new elements of the new visual identity, telling the story of, you know, imagine you are going to Disneyland and not like close your eyes and think about this process. You are walking through the turnstile. You are in you're in Main Street, USA. You turn the roundabout, you hang right, and you see Cinderella's castle in front of you. I guess this would be Disney World. Cinderella's castle in front of you, and you hear the music, and you smell the popcorn in the candy shop, and all of this stuff. Okay, now how many people here thought of this? And I put the Disney D on the screen. Nobody.
Exactly.
You're not
right.
thinking about that, and that's because yeah. Disney is not the Disney logo. Disney is right. All these experiences and this intellectual property and these characters and these stories and these experiences. And that kind of set the stage for, so what we are doesn't change. Who we are, the experience that we provide doesn't change. What we're now doing is more accurately explaining to the world what's great about us and what's great about our process why we love our clients so much. This is a better way of doing, of explaining all of that, but we fundamentally aren't changing. And so that's when, you know, I showed the old logo and the slide actually fades it out. And then I bring up the sunset. Next slide, which is not the new logo yet. It's still not the new logo. It starts to introduce the imagery. So there's the style of photography. There's the typeface. There's, you know, all of these things that, that we had started to build. And then eventually we get to, like, I started with communication strategy, right? Like, this is how we talk about ourselves. These are our differentiators. And then I eventually show the logo. And people loved it. And I think it really helped to explain our logo, how we landed there and how it is a, it's not a totally brand new thing. It's a modernization of the same concepts of the old logo. So the, our old logo was a chef's knife and a coding bracket that was arranged in such a way to create a letter K. And it also sort of looked like the number four. So if you wanted to look it up, you can look up the old logo. So the new logo is a four and a K next to each other, but it's sort of abstract. You can see it here if you're watching it in a video. It's made of four-sided shapes, like tangrams, right? One of those is a square, which evokes the pixel. But in using negative and positive space, it is a four and a K. And so people saw the instant connection that, like, we're still using this visual cleverness to evoke the four and the K that makes Four Kitchens. So they saw it as a step and not as a, like, abandonment of our previous iteration.
That's going to be really valuable for people to hear. Really, like, I'm going to cut that piece out. This can stay in the recording. This doesn't need to be cut. I'm literally going to cut that and make it its own little short.
Oh, cool.
That was masterclass in how you just walked through and how people should also walk through that experience of how you deliver a presentation that is successful. That was exactly it. Home run. Props to you. What I would want people to take away from that is that sets up your chance for success, for internal buy-in, not success of the outcome of the brand and will it work with the clients, but internal buy-in. That raises your chance of success and alignment internally to like a 98%, right? There's still going to be a couple people that are like, eh, I don't really like it. I think we should have been a different color or whatever that is.
Yeah.
But not doing that makes your success at internal alignment, I don't know, somewhere in the coin flip stage, right? Because it's like, here's the thing, here's what we made, no story behind it, no real purpose in the presentation, hope you like it.
Because that's, you have no context no context of what to feel about it or understand or if it just purely becomes aesthetics.
That's right.
If all you give them is aesthetics, that's the only thing that they're going to judge it on. If there's no story or explanation or if you don't point out the things that are clever about it and the things that it's supposed to say. And yeah, absolutely. It just sort
all
of
the decision making, like, along the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go through a rebrand exercise and that's what you're doing at the end, you've basically missed all of the fruit on the tree.
Yeah.
Right. You've like walked all around the tree and pulled none of the fruit off of it.
That's
like,
right.
No, I don't know. I got a leaf. Yeah. That's well, right. There were better things to get off of that tree. All right. So we continue in this organic conversation, which I love to kind of touch on a lot of these, but I'm going to re-ask some of these questions just to make sure we really hit home. I want to come back to one point you made though, and I want you to be very specific, because the goal in these videos is like key takeaways for people that are considering a rebrand. So you talked about making a very small concentrated project team, even though your larger team at that point is how many people?
At the time, it was 45, something like that.
Okay. And you said it was three of you on the project. So I want to give some scale to people listening and watching.
And by the time we announced it, we had acquired another agency. And so we'd actually grown to 65 at the end. So it was an even smaller
percentage. Still kept your team of three, though, a core project team. And when you say core project team, you mean the people that are meeting weekly and are running point on the project.
Yes.
So what were the three roles there? How did you select the three roles that were going to show up on that team?
Yes. So it was myself and the two members of the biz dev team. So the two people who are handling all of the marketing and proposals and sales and all of that. And we met together and decided who would be kind of responsible for various aspects. Most important, all three of us would have a very strong voice at the table, and all three of us would be part of the conversation, reviewing the work, discussing it. What do you like? What do you not like? Which of the options do you like best and why? And on that team, there was myself. So, you know, I'm the longest tenured person at the company, 16 years at that point. We had Cy Robbins, our director of business development. He's been around, pop quiz. How long has it been? 5 years or something like that. Let's say roughly 5 years. And Jenna Harris, who had just joined. So she was brand
new. Oh, nice. Love that.
So it was great to have this, like, here's somebody who goes all the way back in time. Here's somebody who has been around long enough to see a lot of change and a lot of evolution, and somebody who had really, he was the one that really took took control of our marketing strategy and working with our marketing partner, and had been on point for that for years. And Jenna, who is brand new, right? Just kind of just walked in the door, essentially. And also, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about Jenna's perspective in particular, and she said this a lot, and I suppose it was true, but it was true in a really good way, that she was usually the dissenting opinion on a lot of things. Cy and I were usually aligned with, like, yeah, we like this, you know, we like option B better than options A and C. And Jenna would be like, I actually, that was my least favorite, and here's why. And but she kind of said, you know, jokingly, and she probably felt awkward or bad about it on occasion, but that it was really valuable, super valuable to have somebody on that team who's like, I don't agree. And it actually resulted in sometimes actually choosing that option that at first we hadn't really considered. But more often it was that dissent, and the reasons for that dissent would inform the next iteration of the thing that we did choose. So there was a lot of really valuable insight that we were getting from somebody who was new, somebody who has a different background, and could point out things that Cy and I would not see in the branding, and make really good suggestions along the way.
Yeah. So you've kind of hit on that point in a couple different ways now, which is a challenging conversation, for lack of a better phrase, created a better outcome that happened at the leadership level the first time you showed it, which then prepared you for how you might speak about it in the rollout and also inside the project team. That's awesome. I wanted you to speak about the project team specifically, because I think a lot of people struggle to determine, well, who should I add? Yeah. What role should be in there? How big is too big? How small is too small? Mm-hmm. And then how does that then bridge to the larger team? So I just wanted to kind of sit on that for a minute. Yeah, and let people hear how you went.
I think it's also worth pointing out that the three of us all operate at different levels of the business. So, as owner, as the person who has been through all the different iterations of our brand and what we do and services and all of this, somebody who is tightly focused on one core aspect of the business but leads that core aspect, Cy, and somebody who is doing the work on the ground of following up with leads and helping to organize, you know, our presence and strategy at events, somebody who's really handling the nuts and bolts of sales and marketing, having people at all those levels of work was also really valuable. So people that were interacting with it in a really, like, day-to-day kind of way, very client-facing, very sales and marketing forward, and people who are kind of thinking more at a, like, long-term management leadership level.
Yeah, very good. Props to you again for having the awareness to make the team small. That's really step one, right? Everyone's going to determine different players on that small team, depending on the size of the company. For y'all, it's a service-based industry similar to ours. Sometimes our clients are these mega tech companies, right? They need to have a CMO and all these other kind of, like, voice of the customer and big title roles, if you will. Regardless, the point is the same. The smaller they can make that project team, the better for everybody, even though that presents its own challenges. We've talked a lot about good takeaways, and I think more will come from this question, but I want to hear from you. What was the hardest part? Like, a rebrand is not easy. It can be very challenging. So what should anybody listening or watching expect as, like, yeah, this is hard?
For me, the hardest part was, messaging. Mm-hmm. And I say it's not, it wasn't like emotionally the hardest. It was just, it required the most effort and like just brain power, you know, just mm-hmm. we agonized and discussed and debated and reworked and tweaked copy and messaging more than any other aspect of this project. And specifically website copy. And the process that we experienced was, and I admittedly did not expect this going in. And when I was first presented with it, I kind of thought, huh, I was kind of hoping you would do this. And that was writing the website copy, right? Yeah. And my first reaction was like, oh, you're not just going to give it to me and I'm going to like say it's I like it or not and edit it? You mean I have to be the writer and not the editor here? Mm-hmm. That part was just hard. It was just hard work. Mm-hmm. But in the end, even though my first reaction was like, ugh, I thought we were paying you guys to do this, it was really important for us to take the messaging that we had all shaped together and start to put it into action by writing the copy.
Yeah.
Now, we had plenty of help because we would write some of the copy and then we would get really great feedback from your team on it. So it wasn't like we just wrote it and nobody ever looked at it. They were looking very closely at it and providing really good edits and changes. But it was the first time in that process that we were using the stuff that we were building and not just kind of looking at it and thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that was
good point.
That was the part where it got hard. That's where it was like, now you're working out. Now you're going to the gym, mm-hmm. right? You can mm-hmm. read a book about, you know, strength training all you want, but now you got to go lift weights. Like it was that moment. And so I think that was probably the hardest.
Okay. Yeah. Do you think there is also kind of an inherently baked in difference to looking at words and considering words versus looking at colors and kind of the visual sides?
For me, there is, but my background is in writing and editing. Four Kitchens actually started as a publishing company, before we started designing websites.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I pay a lot of attention to that kind of thing. So I tend to agonize over that more anyway. Mm-hmm. And design is something that's a little outside of, you know, I'm not going to be able to come up with very good design ideas, but
got it.
I do have the training and experience to come up with some decent copy. That was the part that I feel like I agonized over more, probably just because like I knew more about it.
Sure. Yeah. 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 It's closer to your wheelhouse and you're going to be even mm-hmm. more passionate about that thing for that reason. Is there anything that you would tell somebody that might be in your similar shoes now looking back?
I would encourage them to ask to go back and revisit some things when you get further down the process and you realize, oh, wait, that part of messaging that we developed 6 weeks ago, now that we've gone through all these other, we built all these other new tools, it actually doesn't exactly work anymore. And so we did that mm-hmm. once. There was something about our differentiators. You know, we picked three. Two of them, by the time we got close to the end, didn't quite feel right anymore. And I think that part of that is because we were really constantly digging deep about how do we explain why we are different and better for our best fit clients. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, we found that there were certain things that we hadn't previously uncovered. And what I really enjoyed about working with the team was they were willing to do that with us. It would be very mm-hmm. easy to say, no, we got to move on. You know, we've already done that. It's like, that's something you can do on your own, but they entertained it and it didn't take a long time. It was just another like item that we added to our to-do list for like maybe a couple of feedback cycles. So like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it being able to like start at point A and go all the way down to Z and then just real quick, pop back at A again and make sure that you set the right foundation. Like go ahead and my advice would be go ahead and do that. And ask for that if you feel like that's a change that you need to make, because you'll probably realize that you learned some stuff along the way that you can reapply to the foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally the journey is learning the whole time. Mm-hmm. Step by step by step. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like was the most rewarding aspect of the project. Now, you're not live yet, so that could be it.
Yeah. But
if not that.
I think it's the pride that we are all experiencing in this new brand. So our team is using the brand in preparation of launching it in 2 weeks. So they are actively rebuilding their document templates and their reports and their dashboards and, you know, creating lists of all the things that need to change out in the world. And in doing that, you can tell that people are like really excited. They feel like the brand is better at explaining our personality. It's more colorful than previous iterations of our brand, which is sort of relied on like, you know, black, white, green. but there's so much more depth and warmth to the brand now. And that people have a lot of say in it too. So as people are creating these templates, they point out things that like, oh, you know, hey, by the way, like these two color combinations, you know, aren't accessible. You're right. So we need to create some new shades of that color that are accessible in certain circumstances. And it is forcing us to really like harden and stress test the brand in a really great way. But everybody's just excited about it. I don't feel like we've necessarily lost, you know, having shown it to the team in October and said, okay, you know, here we are at the end of March, early April. You're going to have to sit on it for a while. It might take, at the time we thought 4 months, and now it's more like five and a half. But there, we haven't lost any enthusiasm for it. They're still very excited to see it out in the world. And especially now that the website is starting to come together and we're starting to show that to team members. The pride and also, so, okay. The pride comes from a few different sources. The first is it just looks good. And it's something that you want to be a part of and excites you, right? And feels like is mature and reflects you as a professional and the kind of team you want to be part of. There's that level of pride. But then there's like a tactical level of pride that is, man, we've got this great brand guidelines document, which by the way, I because I loved it so much, I put it on our company wiki. Like I actually copied and pasted like the text and the elements and all of that stuff from the PDF that you gave us. Yep.
Yes.
So I outlined it in our own internal documentation. And now anybody who needs to know anything, it's there. Like, oh, what are the color codes? What are the hex values for these colors? Like it's right there on that table. Hey, we're going to use this photography on the site. Like what filters should be, oh, here are the filters, right? Here's where you drag the highlights and the shadows and the contrasts and the, like, it's all outlined right there. And that the team can feel like, whoa, this is really professional, right? This is just buttoned up, looks good. It's not stuffy, but man, it used to be like, hey, do we have a thing that does this? No, I don't know. Maybe, you know, we did something like that a few years ago. You can try this thing. I'm like, oh, it looks kind of dumpy and like, well, whatever, you know, but now they got this cool stuff. And even if it doesn't exist, they know how to create it because like, this is the typography and these are the colors. And as long as you follow these rules, it's going to look good.
So what do you think the return on that is, right? You're not out there in the market for 2 years now, so you can't speak to the return of the rebrand from a customer or revenue perspective yet.
Yeah.
But what do you think the return on that internal pride and everybody coalescing around this is?
So in just for that reason, it's hard to quantify that, right? It's really, really big. But what's especially interesting about the timing of this is I mentioned an acquisition that happened in the middle of this rebranding. We had merged with yet another agency about a year before that. So in the last couple of years, Four Kitchens has actually, what was one agency became like three. It's all under one. We aren't separate entities within one company, but we've come together with two other agencies to build a more fully featured, larger organization. And by doing a rebrand, we're giving something that's new for everybody. This isn't, you know, this team joined a year ago and they walked into this organization that has had this brand for 15 years. And, you know, well, I guess this is, I don't really feel like I'm part of this. I didn't really join this company necessarily. I sort of was like volunteered, joined into it.
Yes.
But this is a moment, and this is a big part of the rollout that a big point that I emphasize in the rollout internally, that this brand is now something that is new to everybody, and it's mm-hmm. fresh, and it's like a clean slate, and we all get to build it together. So there is no like, well, where did you come from? You know, what team were you a part of before you joined this one? Like, nope, we're all now on this team. It's a totally new thing. It's the reset button. That multiplies the value of the rebrand and the ROI internally.
Yeah, you've got everybody carrying the same flag now. Mm-hmm. How valuable is it? And what's the return when everyone's rowing in the same direction? You're right. It's multiplied. It starts to get exponential at some point. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Happy to hear that. I knew that about the recent acquisition. I had forgotten that there was another in the mix as well. Mm-hmm. It starts to become really important to have everybody going in the same direction when you have that kind of what could be division, right? Well, I come from this squad and this is how we used to do things. And I come from this squad.
Absolutely. Great. Yeah. I mean, that would be a bit of advice. I never thought that we would do things like mergers and that was never really on my radar. But there were just some great opportunities that came up and we were very lucky to be able to follow through with them. But if there are other business agency owners out there that are considering or have done similar things, you know, some level of rebrand would go a long way to showing to really combining the teams around something that is new to everybody. It's a common experience that everybody gets to share.
Yeah. And we see that we don't see it in 50% of the rebrands we do, but it is a portion. It is a part of the pie chart, maybe 25% in there somewhere. And at all different scales, larger companies, maybe more common with the kind of M&A activity, all the way to a service company like yourself, a 60-person team, also kind of in and around that. I'm glad you spoke to that. It is super valuable to consider what some brand investment would return for companies that have that kind of, well, we used to be three different things and now we're one.
Yep.
Well said. So that leads perfectly into the last question. And you've shared a lot of valuable things, but I want you to now try to share the one thing. If you could only tell somebody one thing when as they enter their rebrand journey, what would you tell them as your main tip?
Don't do it yourself. It probably sounds obvious to some people, but I think even if it's obvious to people, they don't actually do that. And for the same... There's so many reasons why you shouldn't just do it yourself. There is a very practical one, and that is, I mentioned earlier, we don't build our own website. We don't recruit our own team. We are a web design and development. We build websites. We do not build our own website because we would never get done. Mm-hmm. Cobbler's children have no shoes, right? So if you are doing your own brand, you will always back burner that because things happen. There are, you know, client crises and issues and headaches and day-to-day things that will always distract you from doing this work. So having somebody else that's accountable to you and that you are accountable to in return, to get things done at a certain time because it's your money, really helps move things along and forces you to prioritize that work while also offloading it, a lot of it to somebody else. And the second big reason is you just have to have outside perspective. You can never I forget who said it, but it's some very famous like philosopher or somebody, but you cannot understand the mechanics of a machine inside the machine. Mm-hmm. You have to be outside of it to understand how it's operating. Same thing goes for branding or whatever you do professionally. When you're inside the thing every day, you have a certain perspective on like, well, no, this is what makes us different. And this is what we should say. And that's, you just have to have somebody from the outside who doesn't know you necessarily and can look at you impartially. It's like why everybody should go to therapy. It's this very similar concept, right? You just need somebody out there, non-judgmental, who's just going to tell you the way it is. Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't perceive you that way. Actually, I know you're saying those things to me, but I do not perceive you that way. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Shit. I thought all our customers perceived us in this way that we were thinking. I don't know. I don't see it. So I don't think they see it.
Absolutely.
Outside perspective.
outside yeah. perspective. And there's one aspect that I think may be peculiar to me, that I found was really useful. There are certain aspects of my job that I really don't like, and I find deeply uncomfortable. And one of them is competitive analysis. I just really don't like looking at competitors' websites. I know some business owners love it. I know they'd sit around all day and they open up all the, like, what are they saying? And they read all the newsletters. Yeah, and what are they doing? Yeah. And what are they doing? You know, I hate that. It makes me feel so, it just makes me feel weird. I don't know why. I should probably talk to my therapist about that. why do I react that way? But having somebody else do a lot of that and mm-hmm. do the deep digging, like, okay, we went through, you know, you said these are your top three competitors. We went through every page of their site. This is what they're doing. This is how they're saying it. This is, you know, what we think is effective. And how it kind of compares to some of the things that you're doing that are not effective. And, yep. just having that work, like breaking the ice on that thing that's uncomfortable for me was very useful to me personally. I'm probably in the minority there, but that was something that I found individually, idiosyncratically, very, very useful.
Yeah. You might be in the minority in the way that you've positioned it, but you would not be in the minority of the, do I have time or the desire and care to go do that? And I think there's also there's another effect on top of that, which is, oh yeah, and we've also been out here looking in the market for over a decade now. Focus Lab's 13 years old. So although we are only maybe looking in at five direct competitors, we also have all this historical knowledge of other industries and frameworks and all these other things that people have tried successfully or unsuccessfully, where you just couldn't even have that. Yeah. Even if you enjoyed looking at the competitive set and doing that research, it's only going to get you to one step.
Yeah.
Your point is especially valid, which is don't do the work yourself in a season like this. Quite honestly, I think this is the type of economic season that we're in, where people are going to look internal first. Uh-huh. Can we actually do this ourselves and not spend the money? Easy for me to say and sound salesy, but it would be more cost effective and more valuable to do what you're saying, which yes. is look outside yourself, hire somebody to do it. It will get done better, mm-hmm. more efficiently, better outcomes. You'll have accountability, which is important, right? It's easy when you're doing an internal project. You're like, we need to actually pause that. It's very easy yes. to say that.
Yes.
When you know you need to do something and you've hired someone to do it and there are contracts and both parties are now accountable, mm-hmm. you're going to get that shit done.
Yes.
And really you need to get it done. So let's keep on the track.
Yep. Yep. There's it. And it is, it's expensive, but, this sounds cliche. Sounds very cliche, but like it's more expensive not to do it.
Yes.
You know, it is. It's just one of those things, you know,
cliche or not, it is the damn
it's
truth.
It's just true. Yeah.
Yes.
And you have to do it, you know, like periodically. I think we yeah. were way overdue for something mm-hmm. like this. And I think if we had done this maybe at least once in the past or maybe more incrementally or something, we probably would have had, and maybe even today would have more of an edge.
Sure.
But, you know, lesson learned, to yep. stay on top of this as well as the many other things that we have to stay on top of. But, this would not have gotten done, if we had not gone outside.
That's like an internal exercise. Even if you had a design team and all these things that some of our tech company partners have, right? They have internal design teams and groups like that. But again, like what's the best use of that team's time?
Yeah.
And is it their specialty and do they have the background and the knowledge to go to a level that a company like ours is trying to take them?
Yep.
Todd, thanks a ton.
Thank
Super
you.
Valuable conversation. Extra special to me because I think we are so relatable to each other as founders of businesses that are service-based, even mm-hmm. our offerings different. But basically the yin and the yang of our worlds, yep. there's brand and then there's web and they're tightly coupled.
Yep.
So when I hear you speaking about your thoughts, your perspectives, I can only put myself in your shoes, what that feels like. And I'm excited for other service-based owners, founders, et cetera, to listen to this and say, oh, interesting, I hadn't thought about that. Or like, oh, damn right, I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. You shared a lot of good stuff. So thank you.
I appreciate that.
And we'll come back around and we'll record a second episode.
Yes.
I mean it. We'll do episode two. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, we can talk about the launch of the brand,
right,
how it was received from the customer side, which is a whole nother conversation.
Oh, yes.
and all those fun things.
Oh, yeah. So,
thanks, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.